Good morning, everybody. It's still morning, isn't it? I have not been in a pulpit for probably 20 years, and it feels very intimidating to be up here. Can you all hear me now, everybody? Yeah, good. I used to be a Catholic priest, so, you know, some Catholic churches have pulpits and some don't, so that's probably as far back as when I spoke last in a pulpit. And I think the last time I actually spoke to a living congregation in a church like we are today was probably about 10 years ago, not in Ireland at all, in Minneapolis, where I was invited to speak in a Lutheran church. So thank you very much to Emer O'Reilly here in the front and to Bridget for inviting me here today. I've known Emer since the late 80s, so that's a long time ago, Emer. And we haven't met in the flesh for probably, 20 years till this morning? So we've got a little bit older in the meantime. Life moves on and we all change. And I think that's one of the themes I want to choose to talk about in what I have to say today, is that, you know, change is part of our life. It's part of our physical life, but it should also be part of our spiritual life. So I can speak for myself. I used to be a Catholic priest. I left the Catholic priesthood in 1996. And I think it was like, the best image I have for it is that I was in a boat, always tied to the shore, until the day I left not just the Catholic priesthood, but the Catholic Church, which was in 1996. And it was like letting off that rope, and I started sailing off out into the sea, not knowing where it was going to lead me. And it's led me to where I am today, but speaking theologically and spiritually, I'm in a very different place today than I was when I was a member of the Catholic Church. My spirituality in particular, which is what I want to talk about today, has changed hugely. And part of where I'm at now is being shaped by where the world is at now, because the world has changed too hugely in the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years, as all of you know. And, you know, if you just look at the world even just today, so today the COP27 meeting of world leaders is taking place. That's the climate action meeting of world leaders to try and see what we can do as human beings to deal with this oncoming existential threat of climate change and biodiversity loss. And we're being reminded every day of how serious now that is. It's coming at us like a train at full speed. And how on earth can we adjust our lives sufficiently to deal with this? We can't. We've already done so much damage, but we have to do our best to try and limit the damage. But that's at the political level. That's at the level of spending money and changing our cars to electric cars and changing our heating systems in our homes to heat pumps and insulating our homes and stop using fossil fuels. That's all that side of things. It's external stuff. But what about the internal stuff? So, internally, I grew up with a belief in God. And when I went to study theology, I studied people like St. Augustine, Thomas Aquinas. I didn't study Martin Luther, I have to say, because I was studying Catholic theology, of course. But even Martin Luther, or the other teachers of theology at that time of the Reformation, they still spoke of a God which I think gives us an image that's inappropriate for today. So that's maybe my first point, is for us to look at the image of the divine that we have inherited through our various churches and religions, because practically all of them are monotheist. So they all go back to the God discovered by Moses. That's how I pinpoint it anyway, when God spoke to Moses in the desert, and it led him to go back to Egypt and bring the slaves out of Egypt and led to the scriptures and led to the law of the Bible and so on. And it led on to Christianity and it led on to Islam and, of course, to Judaism and so on. So this is the image of God we have inherited. First of all, that God is male. Maybe even before that, that God is a person, that he can speak to us. And then that God is in heaven. Like even today, we prayed the Our Father. So do we presume that there's a God who is a person and that that person is male? And then that God is in heaven, our Father who art in heaven. That to me now is very presumptuous, because I think the divine is bigger than anything we can ever imagine. And that sort of slotting our understanding of the divine into this narrow picture of a sort of a male, patriarchal, exclusive type God. So nobody else's image of God is allowed. That certainly was the case in the past, wasn't it? You know, people who believed other ways of living with the divine were told they were that was the devil's work. They had to be kicked out and moved away, and you had to just believe in this one version. So to me, this image that we have inherited is no longer appropriate. And I don't know if you agree with me in that or not. I've been told that you're a congregation who don't even agree with each other, so you probably won't agree with me either, and that's absolutely fine. I'm just throwing in my perspective. And my perspective is that this image which we've inherited, and by the way, which we just haven't inherited as individuals, it has shaped our world. That's the problem. It has shaped our world. It has put an emphasis on male over female. It sort of gives a tick to the idea of authoritarianism, because this God, we have an image of him as being authoritarian, of being exclusive, intolerant. All of these things we can apply to the image of God that we have inherited. A God that is in heaven, so totally removed from nature. Like, these are all things that now, I believe, are wrong with our society. And we have to find another way of imagining the divine. So I'm not the sort of person who's going to reject all of that and become an atheist. I believe that there's a greater power, and that it's so big and so amazing that it's beyond us. And the word awe comes to mind, you know? If you experience awe, or if you experience wonder, or if you experience mystery, so there's other words for it apart from awe. If you experience a sense of something beyond yourself, which is what awe is, or mystery, or wonder, or magic, and what about the coincidences in our lives that we can't explain, and yet they happen all the time? There's something way, way, way beyond us. And okay, we've traditionally called that God, but I think now it's inappropriate. We need to call it something. What is it? It's we can't even put words on it. It's so difficult to get our heads around it. Somebody said to me recently, it's like a microbe living in your hair trying to understand who you are as a human being. You know, it's far too big for the microbe to understand who I am. And similarly, this whole world that we live in is far too big for us to understand as well. So we need the humility. This man who was full of himself, we need the humility to allow ourselves to recognize that there's something way beyond us, and let that call us to worship, and let that call us to acknowledge the sacred in our lives. But if we move away from standard religion, if we move away from monotheism, we sort of move into a vacuum. And that can be a difficult place to be. And I think actually the Western world is moving into a vacuum at the moment. We're not sure where we're going. A lot of the people that I work with today, because I'm a wedding celebrant, I work with American couples and European couples as well as Irish couples. And most of who come to me are people who would describe themselves as spiritual but not religious. That seems to be a new phrase. Spiritual but not religious. So these represent people moving out of the traditional religions, and perhaps you here would represent that too. I don't know, you can tell me yourself afterwards. Move out of traditional religions and into some type of spirituality that's non-religious. So that's one movement. There's another movement going on at the moment which I recognize in the young people that I meet, and it's a love for nature. People want to go back into the forest. They want to go back into the wild. They want to do the Camino. You know, they want to do the Irish Caminos, because we now have those as well. They want to get out and experience the awe and the wonder and the mystery of the world we live in. So there's two hooks, if you like, for the way forward. And for me, I've managed to combine all of that into a discovery that in the Celtic tradition, we have a way forward as well. And perhaps not just the Celtic tradition, but maybe other indigenous traditions can teach us as well. But for me, it's the Celtic tradition, and particularly the Celtic Christian tradition. So I don't have to reject my Christianity or my belief in the teachings of Jesus. I might interpret them differently than Augustine did or somebody else did, but I can take the teachings of Jesus in this new way. So these Celtic Christian monks, it seems to me, were more right brain than left brain. The left brain is Augustine, the Augustines of the world, and perhaps the Luthers of the world, and perhaps the Thomas Aquinas of the world, very interested in, well, as we know, it ended up in trying to discover how many angels could balance on the top of a pin. It's that sort of, you know, very dissecting type work where you get to the point and you nail the point. Whereas the right brain is a totally different approach, where you're more trying to get the bigger picture. You're trying to bring things together rather than take things apart. You're trying to see the whole. It's a holistic approach. And these Celtic monks appear to me to have been holistic. And what they wanted to do was, they weren't a bit interested, as far as I can make out, in the discussions that were going on across Europe right from medieval times as to who was Orthodox and who wasn't. They weren't a bit interested in who was heretic and who wasn't, or in burning people at the stake who are teaching something they shouldn't be teaching. They weren't a bit interested in any of that. What they seemed to have been interested in was experiencing the divine. And I think they inherited that from their pre-Christian culture, because in the early Irish culture before Christianity, there was this sense that the world could manifest itself in two ways. Could manifest itself in a physical way, where you see the trees, you feel the wind, you throw the water over your face and you experience it. And that's the material world. But then behind the material world, these ancient Celts got a great sense, I think, of some spiritual world, equally present. And the way they talked about it was, they attached a spiritual presence to almost everything in nature. They attached a spiritual presence to the sea, and they call that the god of the sea, Mananon. They had another god of the sea, Lir. They attached a spiritual presence to a river, and they call the river after a goddess. They attached a spiritual presence to the sun and called it after a sun god, maybe Lu or some other sun god. They had lots of names for these presences that they felt in nature. And there's an invitation to us, I think, because the challenge is, of course, to try and save nature now and to get a new relationship with nature, which is less damaging and less ignorant in the way we relate to it. And here's a way to find the presence of the divine in nature. And for the Celts, they couldn't put it all into one name, so they had lots of names. They had lots of gods and goddesses, as both male and female. So the earth itself, Eriu, who gave her name to Ireland, she's the goddess of the land. Then you have Boeing, the goddess of the river Boyne. Then you have so many others. So, and they all intermarry as well and have children. And so there's a world out there of the divine. That's something we could learn from, and certainly something that I've been learning from. But then the Christian monks brought in another element. They brought in the scriptures. But here's the thing. I think what happened with monotheism that became dominant in the Western world was, it all became based on the book. It all became based on scriptures, on the Bible, or in the case of Islam, on the Quran. And we lost connection with nature. Whereas the Celtic monks always said that there are two sources of your connection with the divine. One is the scriptures, and one is nature. So to me, here is a way back for us. And just to illustrate a bit more, because I've only 5 minutes left, a little bit more about how these monks did this. So for me, it seems these monks emphasize the importance of living in such a way that you are surrounded by a sense of wonder. John O'Donohue, whom we had read today by Janet, speaks about living in the presence of wonder. And this is what these monks, I think, were trying to do. They were trying to find a place where they could be surrounded by a sense of wonder and awe. And when you have a sense of wonder and awe, you are outside of yourself. You're in touch with something outside of yourself. You're in touch with the divine. And I think, you know, these ancient peoples put different faces, different personalities on it, and that's fine. And I would say each one of us has our own unique perspective and can talk about our experiences of the divine in whatever way we feel appropriate to us. That's what I think. That's where I think we're heading, that everybody will be respected for their own personal experience of the divine and their own way of describing it. If you go back to Moses and take the story of Moses in the desert as being a real story, we don't know whether it was or not. It could have been just a legend or could have been rewritten many times. But let's take it as a real story. I think it's quite likely for somebody working out in the desert on their own in very, very hot temperatures. He was way down in the desert in Egypt. He's on his own. He perhaps is dehydrated. And he has this profound experience where he thinks this bush in front of him is on fire. And then it begins to speak to him. Now, there's an experience there which is transformative. And many of us have had experiences that are transformative in our lives. I've had them myself. But he then had to interpret that experience. And the interpretation is something that we are in control of. So let's take a simple example. I can walk down the street and meet somebody and I feel a spark and I can respond to that and it can end up me marrying that person. Or I can feel the spark and I can ignore it and walk away and not marry that person. So the experience will be there as a fact in me. But my interpretation and my response to that experience is up to me. So if you look back at that story of Moses, one interpretation was given to his experience, and the religion then was built on that. And all the experiences of other people, all the spiritual experiences of other people in Judaism and Iran are of no relevance. The only experience that's of relevance is Moses. What I'm saying now is that each of us can be in touch with the divine. Each of us will have experiences of our own. And again, as one of the readings said, we have senses which can pick up that sense of something personal being communicated to us in our hearts or in our souls that leads to us living out our destiny. And I think that's part of where we have to go to, is to be true to ourselves and rather than follow some type of a formula or authoritarian teaching, that we instead follow our hearts, follow even more maybe our souls, just as the Celtic monks did. So just to finish, one of the ways that the Celtic monks had of doing this was to wander. So to wander is to let yourself off, a bit like cutting the rope and letting the boat off. It's to let yourself go, perhaps to somewhere we have never been before, perhaps to do the Camino, to get yourself out of your normal routine and allow the spirit a chance to move inside you. These Celtic monks wandered all over Ireland, men and women, and they also then wandered all over Europe. And the word they used was wander. So they weren't on pilgrimage to Rome. They didn't have an objective place to go to. They were letting the spirit guide them. And they trusted that in that wandering, that things would become clear as to what their life was about, as to who they really were, and as to what their work should be. And if you look at the stories of the Irish saints, either those who stayed in Ireland or those who went abroad, their stories are so amazing, even to this day, even though some of these stories go back 1,500 years. And their stories of them wandering and then finding their place of destiny or their place of resurrection and doing amazing work there. So to me, that's possibly a way into the future for us, at least in Ireland, is to go back to that spiritual heritage of our own tradition and to use these Celtic monks as our mentors for going forward. Thank you.